I call this meeting of the Committee on Housing Finance and Policy to order. Let it be known that we have quorum. First order of business today will be approval of last meeting's minutes. Can I have a motion to approve last meeting's minutes? Vice Chair Dotseth moves the minutes. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Thank you for the unanimous approval, members. With that, we'll move to our first bill on the agenda today, which will be House File 1902. Representative Nash, I'll let you get up there and move your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 1902 to come before the committee.
Representative Nash moves House File 1902. Representative Nash, to your bill.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. This bill really comes out of the last 2.5 years of education in this committee. I think committee members that have been here for several years will realize sometimes we hear, oh, I didn't know that those are my rights or those are my obligations or those are the things that I had that were afforded to me. And I think simply making these probably placards, much like you see in the break rooms at work, visible for all tenants and all landlords, and also in the packets of when they move in, like, here are your rights. I think that this is just a very common sense approach that can cut off questions at the before they even become questions. I think that this is just a very common sense approach that solves some things that I'm sure my colleagues on both sides have heard here in this committee in the past. So that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Nash. And I don't see that we have any testifiers, but is there anyone from the public that wishes to testify? All right, seeing none, we'll go into member discussion on the bill. Representative Bajer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. Just one quick question. So it says the commissioner will publish this information, and then how do you anticipate that they get it? Will they get it out to the landlords, or do the landlords need to do something? Just how is that going to work?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Representative Bajer, I think that that's probably the best pathway forward is to have the commissioner design the graphics and design the language that is mapped directly to what existing statute is, and then push that out to the landlords and the tenants to make sure that it is, one, accurate to statute, which, as we know, is harder than it isn't sometimes. So I think having it come from the commissioner is the best idea.
Representative Bajer.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative. I mean, I think it's always good when more people can know what their rights are, and you know, having them posted, I think, is always helpful, and just having that information. So I appreciate you bringing this bill forward.
Thank you.
Any further discussion, members? Thank you, Representative Nash, for bringing the bill forward today. Again, we've learned there's a lot of resources out there by state government, and I think making sure that they're well listed for whether it be landlords or tenants to be able to utilize those resources that we have put a lot of money into and staff time into is incredibly important to streamlining a lot of the things that people face out there. So, Representative Nash, closing comments to your bill.
Thank you.
There we go. With that, Representative Nash renews his motion that House File 1902 be laid over. All right, we'll move to the next bill on the agenda, which is House File 935. Representative Nash, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move House File 935 to come before the committee for, I believe, to be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yep, that is correct, Representative Nash, to your bill.
Well, if you love the first Jim Nash bill, this one's going to check all your boxes, I think. So I think it was two years ago, the first year of the biennium, we had a bill here that created the ability for tenant organizers to come into law. And I'm not trying to change that. And I had brought this amendment when we were in committee before. And it was effectively designed to say, if you are allowing a tenant organizer in, that tenant organizer should undergo a criminal background check. And I got a question from Representative Ray Rauer before committee started as to why. And realistically, it's so that if someone comes into your building that you, according to the statute, you may not have a great or deep knowledge of who they are, and they're going to be able to go door to door as the law allows, then we should have the ability to say, with that access to a building, we should know more about that person as they go along. So I had given Ms. Davis a request beforehand if she wouldn't mind articulating what the underlying statute that we're trying to amend actually allows the organizer to have access to.
Ms. Davis.
Chair and members, there's only one statute on the tenant organizers, and it's 504B.212. It allows tenant organizers to come into a building with a tenant who lives there, if they don't live there. Or, you know, the tenant organizer could be someone who lives there, but it could also be another person. And it allows them to distribute information and have meetings there. And it does the only real requirement in terms of what a tenant organizer can be is that they have to be independent of the owner of the building. Mm-hmm. But that's the only parameters on who they can be. They can be a tenant of the building, or they can be another person. They cannot be the owner of.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Ms. Davis. I mean, that's if you read the statute that is the underlying statute, the person can come in with a tenant. They don't have to have a great detailed relationship or knowledge of who that person is. So if someone were to bring in somebody that they may have known for a little bit, there's a lot of things that we learn about people that they didn't share ahead of time. And we do background checks when we have employees coming in, specifically so that we can find out things that they may not want to tell us. And oftentimes, people are not always forthright with what some of their background is. And I think that that's the justification to try to do this background check, is to make sure that the tenants are not going to be getting effectively solicited or lobbied by someone to organize that may not have the best intent in mind. So that is the bill.
Thank you, Representative Nash. We'll move into testifiers. I believe we have one on the list here. It'll be Eric Howell. Welcome to committee. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Chair Igo and members of the Housing Finance Policy Committee, my name is Eric Haugi, Executive Director of HomeLine, statewide tenant advocacy organization that provides free legal advice to tenants throughout the state. Last year, we advised around 20,000 households from every county in the state. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. While we appreciate Representative Nash's concern for the safety and security of Minnesota renters, unfortunately, the scope of this bill will cause significant confusion. Residential renters in Minnesota, just like homeowners, expect to have the right to allow guests to visit them. Guests of tenants, such as friends, family members, neighbors, or even a non-resident tenant organizer, are already covered by existing case law. In State v. Hoyt from 1981, the Minnesota Supreme Court clearly adopted the rule that a tenant has a right to give guests a license to visit, and the landlord cannot deny or interfere with this license. Background checks are not required. Additionally, the Minnesota legislature has further protected the right of political candidates and their campaign volunteers to enter and canvass apartment complexes, Minnesota Statute 211B.20. This law does not require background checks. House File 935 creates a background check requirement for a specific subset of individuals who would already be subject to laws and lease provisions regulating the conduct of guests. Expanding a background check requirement to other individuals like tenant organizers who do not have access to or keys to the units is a slippery slope and could end up being so expansive it would cause hardships for everyone involved. Should each and every individual guest that enters an apartment complex be subject to a background check by the landlord, regardless of if they have keys to units? This would include family and friends of a tenant, personal care attendants, Meals on Wheels providers, any agents or employees of the landlords who do not have keys, such as janitorial staff, plumbers, caretakers, etc. It could also include city and state inspectors, prospective tenants, delivery drivers, political candidates, and their campaign volunteers. Please vote no on this proposal, which will not keep Minnesota tenants safer, but will instead cause confusion within rental housing. If the committee is interested in supporting safety and security of Minnesota renters, HomeLine is happy to provide a variety of suggestions based on the experiences of our clients. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Haugi. Is there any questions for our testifier? All right, thank you. Is there any members from the public that wish to testify? Seeing none, we'll go to member discussion. Representative Agbaje.
Thank you, Chair Igo. So we did hear this last year as an amendment, and now it's before us as a bill. I guess I'm having a hard time with this, similar to this last year, Representative Nash. It's really just about there's so many people who come into an apartment building. I mean, I live in an apartment building. I don't know all the people who are in there every day, either trying to do maintenance or they're doing delivery or they're prospective tenants, right? And so, like, or they're guests of people. There have been so many times people have had a variety of guests, maybe some of them I would not have wanted. And so I think here, because the underlying bill, it just allows tenants to have the right to organize. They don't have to organize. They don't have to invite anybody in to organize them if they don't want to. But if a tenant group does, if tenants do decide that, hey, we actually want to put something together, they now have that right to do so. And maybe they decide they need a little help, right? So they go to an outside organization to kind of to help them with that, to set that up, to have those meetings. I don't think that's any different than inviting someone, you know, if you're going to have a meeting with people, with a couple of your neighbors because you want to throw some event together or you want to organize something with the apartment building across the street. And so I guess I'm just really trying to understand, why go through this extensive process of a background check for this specific group of people, but not for somebody who's going to come in and put flyers for a commercial enterprise on everybody's door?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bajaj. My concerns, if you remember, I articulated them the last time I did this, were that the organizer potentially is going to be going door to door in the apartment. So it's going to be more than just a one-to-one visit. So if I invite so-and-so to come to the apartment, they're going to come to my door. So that's the one aspect of the concern, is that there's more than, it's a one-to-many. And if you are dropping off something literature-wise, very often you're dropping it at the mailboxes outside of a controlled door. Sometimes you're let in and you're accompanied by somebody. And in the conversation around the underlying bill the last time, the question that I had of the author at the time was, would they always be accompanied? The answer was no, that they could come in and they could just kind of wander on their own. Once again, as the father of children who live in apartments, I would like to have a higher level of scrutiny available to somebody that would ostensibly be walking through the apartment building where my child or children live.
Representative Bajaj.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Nash, then, does that mean you would be willing to extend these background checks to everyone who comes into an apartment building? I mean, because even going back to the example of someone who's putting something door to door, like, I may not feel comfortable with that person being there, and they're selling something for business, right? And so I guess I just want to know, like, how would you be able to distinguish who is somebody who's coming to lay literature down about here's how you can organize with your fellow neighbors versus someone who's saying here's 10% off a pizza down the place down the street? Because those people, they do get to walk around, like, at least I know in my building, like, when they've done that, they walk around on their own. There's no one who's attending with them.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, perhaps Representative Bajaj, then I would be uncomfortable with that necessarily. I am a very secure person. It's what I do for a living. I work in security. So I appreciate the knowledge of who has access and who doesn't have access. But as it relates specifically to this bill, not hypotheticals, I think that having the ability to say of an organization, if you're going to be sending these tenant organizers into the building, we should have a reasonable expectation, in my perspective, as to understand who they are and what do we not know about them. Because again, we all have learned things about people even recently on things that we didn't figure would have been true to that person. So I think that understanding who has access to buildings and who has access to the people that live there is not an unrealistic expectation. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Gabashi.
I'll just do final comments. I get the safety concern. I think we all have safety concerns when it comes to the places where we live. But I do think at the end of the day, the underlying bill is really just trying to ensure that folks have the right and the knowledge to be able to organize if their landlords are not holding up their end of the lease. I think that the people that they tap into to be able to help give them that education and that knowledge base to be able to do that efficiently and well is really important to respect. And I just think that this type of bill sort of puts us on a track of limiting people's ability to be able to engage in their rights that, that they have as tenants. So I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
Next on the list will be Vice Chair Dotseff.
Thank you, Chair Eagle. Representative Nash, thank you for bringing this bill forward to us again. I know that we had seen this last year. I believe it was an amendment form. Is that correct? Mm-hmm. I think Representative Abadji actually brought up a good point. I think by living in an apartment, she actually lives in a common space, a common area that's actually shared with other people. With that said, I guess I look at how does this bill actually potentially protect the tenants from a physical harm that may happen. I guess I've witnessed where you walk in some of these situations. I've personally seen where you may see a lot of nefarious things taking place. Can you give some examples, maybe?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Chair. Representative Dossett, I think you've encapsulated my perspective.
Yeah.
Is that people who have access to the places that we live should have some scrutiny applied to them, in my opinion. Again, maybe I'm just an overprotective dad, but this is something that has defined my adulthood as if I have people who are having access to the place that I live or my private spaces, I would like to have some level of scrutiny that I'm able to apply to them.
Vice Chair Dotseff.
Thank you, Representative Nash. I'll just give an example that I actually personally witnessed. At one point in my life, my son and daughter-in-law were actually living in an apartment and with our grandchildren. And from what we witnessed in that location, we actually encouraged them to find a new location to live just because of some of the things that were potentially taking place there. Thank you.
Any follow-ups, Representative Nash? All right, next on the list will be Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Thank you, Representative Nash. I guess I need to, it's been a while since I've lived in an apartment, but it seems like they've become more and more secure, what I've seen of apartments. And the question I have is, are organizers, do you have to let organizers into the apartment complex to go through? Is that the law that went through?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And yes, as Ms. Davis read through, let's say a tenant were to live in an apartment and they wanted to invite somebody in to be a potential organizer, the answer of no is not an applicable answer. So they would have to say yes, they can have access to the building.
Representative Johnson.
So thank you. Thank you, Chair Igo. Thank you for that answer. So then the example is brought up as far as flyers. You can have a no flyer. You can have a policy that if you don't live here, you can't hand out flyers. You can have security there. You can also have, imagine on the lease saying if you do have a friend that comes over, you're responsible for the friend. But I'm just wondering, my question is, what responsibility does a landlord have if something does happen and somebody does get hurt, all of a sudden a lawsuit comes up that you're not providing a secure situation for that person, and the expectations of, hey, I live in a secured place, and now I open up my door and I got accosted. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it happens, where does the landlord's responsibility come in to provide a secure living situation?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And I think I would refer back to nonpartisan for the underlying statute. I don't believe, if memory serves me, that there was a penalty clause of this underlying statute if something were to be violated or if something would fall on the landlord or the tenant who invited the organizer in, but maybe Ms. Davis can clarify that for us.
Ms. Davis.
Chair and members, I don't think liability for the landlord is addressed in statute related to this or anything similar to this.
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and that's what I thought. I just wanted to make sure that I let nonpartisan address that, but I don't, perhaps there's something for you to work on there, because I think that, I mean, clearly this is a divided issue, but I think that it is something that is not unreasonable for someone to expect that the security of their building is taken to a much higher level of seriousness.
Representative Johnson.
One more question. Thank you, Chair Eagle. I own a contracting, and we've worked with a lot of property owners in many levels, and I know one of the requirements of working with them is that we had to provide the name of the technicians that are going to be working there, and so that they could do a background check because they knew they would be contacting tenants. They would be going in into the homes and stuff like that. So it's not unusual that that is an expectation when they're going through. So thank you, Chair.
Any follow-up, Representative Nash?
Nope.
Next on the list will be Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Representative Nash, thanks for bringing the bill forward in the conversation today. Just in looking through, I think I have a couple of questions around logistics, but also going back to the original bill that we passed in committee out of the into law last biennium. Are you aware if the bill that we passed does in fact or does not say anything about a tenant organizer needing to accompany a tenant?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Well, at the beginning, we had Ms. Davis read what the underlying statute was, and the language in there was they could invite them in. It did not give any specificity as to accompany them. So that's what the underlying statute said.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Nash. And the underlying bill in 504B-212 does say that, in fact, the tenant organizer must be accompanied by a tenant. So I think as we're talking about, I think it's important to put out there that that is in fact what the bill says, that it wouldn't just be in the hypotheticals we're talking about pizza person walking around with discounted flyers, just being able to walk anywhere around must be accompanied by the tenant. But I want to also dig into just like the logistics of how this would work. Because I'm not seeing anything in here, you know, in 112 to 115 in subdivision 2 that the tenant organizer must complete a criminal history consent form and provide payment to the landlord for the actual cost of conducting that background check. And then at that point, then the landlord can make a determination of if that person would be allowed or not into the building. And I don't see anything about, like, the timeline, transparency on the cost, the process for how that would work. So can you just walk us through in the bill that you envision, how would that just logistically work?
Sure. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, if I'd be happy to work on it if you're offering to help me work on it. The answer is, in my vision of how it would work is if somebody is going to decide to become an organizer, that they would have some organizational background or some organization itself that says, here's who we are, we're going to go and help tenants organize. That they would have to then come up with a methodology to go have these people go through a criminal background check.
Representative Kozlowski.
Quick. Thank you, Chair. And Representative Nash. You know, I think having been somebody who's a part of our tenant union, and I walked around and was a part of many of our community members, renters, homeowners, business leaders, community leaders, and everything in between in our community. And I think I just see this bill as another way to hamper or dampen tenant power and our ability to go out there and make sure that we are continuing to create an equal playing field for renters in Minnesota. And so I can't support this bill. I think that in terms of who we're keeping out, keeping in, I also did delivery driver and know many people who do DoorDash and Uber, and let alone city workers, whether it's a state and city inspector or a family and friend and Meals on Wheels providers, as we've heard. And I think that when we talk about making policy and getting at the issue that you're trying to solve, which, you know, I feel deeply as well. I'm a girl parent as well, and that's super important to me. And creating a safe world, a lot of the work that I work on around here is anti-violence. And I think, like, when we're making policy that has intended or unintended consequences to continue to keep people out, to put up walls and put up barriers, that this is just another one of those. And for those reasons, I would hope that we would say no to this bill.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kozlowski, I'm not trying to suppress people's ability, and that, I made that very clear from the very beginning, that I'm not trying to hamper someone's ability to be a tenant organizer. I'm not trying to eliminate. If I simply wanted to do that, I would have brought a bill that was a repealer. That's not the intent. But once again, I think that there's a balance between the ability to organize and making sure that people who are also residents have an expectation of safety.
Next on the list will be Representative Hussein.
Representative Nash, it looks like we had this conversation about this amendment for last year, and now you brought it forward as a bill. And the bill that was passed for last year is giving people to organize. My colleague, Representative Perez Vega, because we do see a lot of discriminations when it comes to tenant people organizing and advocating for non-speaking people in English. And I don't understand what's the purpose for this bill. Why is required a criminal background check for tenant organizing necessary? And what problem does it aim to solve this? I don't get it. Can you ask?
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hussein, I just said a number of times I'm not trying to take away people's opportunity to organize. My intent is to add another level of security for people. And, you know, there have been more than a number of times where you effectively say, oh, I would have never guessed that that person had that in their background. And that is what I'm trying to solve. I'm not trying to take away the opportunity for people to organize. I've made that abundantly clear. So why do we have this as a bill? Last time it was an amendment. We're in a brand new legislative session, and we bring bills back that were once amendments. We bring forward ideas that are still valid. My personal perspective is that if I lived in an apartment, I would like people who have access to go door to door to have a background check. That's my perspective. Not trying to suppress anyone's ability to go and become an organizer. And once again, I made that abundantly clear. So that's the rationale.
And some of those people already living in the property and they go through a background check. So you want them to go another background check for them to be organized tenant?
Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hussein, I'm saying that an outside individual, as it was described in the statute, is somebody who can be invited in by a tenant that does not live there. That's what I'm trying to get at.
Representative Hussein.
And those people, they might not live in the property, but they could come and help organize. What about those union peoples that are advocating for those individuals?
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And once again, we're now delving into the hypotheticals. My point is, if they're going to be an organizer, my perspective is that it would not be untoward of us to ask that they have a background check when they're coming in. It's just as simple as that.
I think.
Any follow-up, Representative Hussein?
I think this is not a good bill, and I'm not going to support it. And thank you for bringing it forward.
Co-Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Representative Nash, question. Do you think that politicians should have to clear a background check before entering a multifamily building?
Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I would tell you, Representative Howard, I would be willing to undergo a background check myself. Sure. How about you?
Chair Howard.
Chair Igo, Representative Nash, it's a serious question because your bill presupposes.
It is a serious answer.
Yeah. Well, your bill doesn't include politicians. It includes tenant organizers. And in doing so, you presuppose that for the tenant organizers are by nature somehow more of a safety risk than a politician. Anybody who's followed the news recently might question whether a politician or a tenant organizer poses more of a safety risk to the public. And so that's my problem with this bill. You mentioned hypotheticals. Your bill poses a hypothetical. You are essentially making the case that this group of folks that want to organize and knock door-to-door and organize as tenants, pose a different level of a safety risk than a politician or a private contractor, as Representative McBajay mentioned. And so that's my problem with this bill. Think that if the intent truly is the public, the safety of those there, that you'd have a much more expansive bill if that's the concern of anybody walking through that door. But this bill doesn't. And so I stand in opposition.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I certainly hope that you're not trying to second guess my intent, Chair Howard, because you just said that if that was the intent, and then you asked a question. So we shouldn't be doing that. But if you'd like to do an oral amendment, we can add politicians to this if you'd like.
Chair Howard.
I'm content to just vote no or oppose the bill.
Well, I don't even think you're going to get to do that since it's being laid over for possible inclusion. But, yeah, if you wanted to go and expand it to politicians, we can do that as well. I'm more than happy to stand to the level of scrutiny that I would ask somebody to come in if they were a tenant organizer. I have no problem with that.
I'll make a few closing comments as well. Thank you, Representative Nash, for the bill, members of the vibrant discussion. I want to just direct everyone to line 1.9 of the bill that I think is an incredibly important part to the conversation today, and that is the word may. It is not a mandate, but if a landlord or housing provider looks at and sees an issue with maybe one of these organizers that would want to move forward with the background check, this bill is authorizing the ability to do so. I think that is a really important part of the discussion that we're having here today. It's not saying that everyone, but it's saying that if that landlord has concerns, or maybe it's a tenant that goes to their landlord and says, hey, I've been seeing this organizer, I have some concerns. Now the landlord has the opportunity to may and request this background check. And I think that's good policy. So with that, Representative Nash, closing comments on the bill.
Thank you.
With that, Representative Nash re-renews his motion that House File 935 be laid over. All right, members, next on the agenda will be House File 2492, so I'll hand the gavel off to Vice Chair Dotseth.
Welcome, members. We are looking to Vice Chair, our Chair Eichel. We are actually here to hear House File number 2492. This bill is being laid over for possible inclusion. Chair Eichel.
Thank you, Chair Dotseth. House File 2492 is probably one of the shortest bills I've ever written, being just a brief three lines with one title. The bill in front of us today would basically put into state statute that any bills that we see moving through the state legislature that increase the cost of housing by more than $3,000, that bill must be referred to us here in the Housing Committee. The thought process behind doing this is that as we've had discussions in this committee and in the hallways and talking about issues, we realize that housing has many things that lead to rising costs. And as this Housing Committee evolves and as we look to tackle issues to keep housing affordable and diverse, I see it as being important that this committee has a stake in discussions about things that could increase that cost. So we see things that move through labor and industry that increase the cost. We see things that move through the Energy Committee that raise the cost. We see things that can move really through any committee that can raise the cost of housing. And I think it would be important moving forward that this committee has its seat at the table so that us as members who are part of the Housing Committee and members in the future after us who are going to be part of a Housing Committee can have that discussion and fully vet bills so we can do our best to keep the cost of housing affordable and keep that housing diverse so we can create stable homes for Minnesotans, whether they live right here in St. Paul or up in Minnesota's Iron Range. So that's my opening comments, and I believe we do have some testifiers.
Well, thank you, Chair Eichel. With that, we've got the testifier, if they'll step up, Matthew Spellman. Thank you, Matthew. Will you identify yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, members, it's good to be with you today. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of Chair Igo's House File 2492. For the record, my name is Matt Spellman. I'm the Senior Director of Advocacy for the Minnesota Realtors. Minnesota Realtors is a statewide business trade association representing over 21,000 real estate professionals that work with buyers and sellers of all types of property. I want to first thank the chair for bringing this bill forward. I love to see a bill this short. It only took me a moment to read, and I think I instantly knew exactly what it was seeking to accomplish. Minnesota Realtors appreciates the opportunity that we had earlier this session to provide some to present to this committee housing market data. And during that presentation, we shared information from our 2024 year-end report that showed the statewide median price of a home was $345,000. The median sales price statewide has been on a consistent upward trajectory, increasing $150,000 since 2015. That is a 77% increase in only 10 years. With rising home prices making it difficult for so many to get into sustainable home ownership, this bill provides a great opportunity for the legislature to be thoughtful in crafting policies that have the potential to add significant cost to the construction or remodeling of residential housing by ensuring this committee has the chance to discuss these proposals. Mr. Chair and members, thank you again for the opportunity to share my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Spellman. We will open it up to the public for public testimony. Anyone here that would like to publicly testify? Hearing none, members' discussion. Representative?
Thank you, Chair. Chair Igo, I guess my main question is just, do we have any idea how many bills this might be in a legislative session? I think it's a good idea. I'm just concerned that there could be, like, you know, hundreds of them, and I'm wondering if maybe the dollar amount might need to be higher just for that reason. Do we have any idea?
Chair Igel?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Rivera, for the question. You know, there was a little bit of conversation about what that dollar amount should be. What we kind of defaulted on when I wanted to put $3,000 in is, you know, the metric when we talk about housing is how $1,000 cuts out so many folks out of being able to afford a home. So I was like, okay, well, we can't do $1,000, even though that would be a good amount in some ways. $3,000 felt like a stable amount. I know I'm kind of breaking my own rule in a lot of ways because I like to have better data to back that up. But I wanted to get us a starting point, and I'm happy to have a conversation and work on what we think is best. But $3,000 felt like a good starting point, and this bill is being laid over, so I look forward to having that conversation. We can work on this.
Thank you, Chair Igel. Any additional follow-up questions?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I guess a follow-up question would just be, maybe it would make sense for it to be up to that it could come, and then it'd be up to the chair whether or not it needed to, just in case it ended up being hundreds of bills, right? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rohrer. Any more member comments?
Well, Mr. Chair, if I could just follow up a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Again, I hear that question, and thank you for that. I think I'll defer to my co-chair, Howard, on this. We don't get as many bills to the housing committees. We probably should that do get referred to us. And this is just a way for us to help capture some of those bills that, again, I think a lot of the stuff we see, you know, whether it be labor and industry, whether it be energy, we see a lot of these type of new mandates and code regulations and changes that move forward in a way that housing isn't brought into the conversation unless a member of that committee has a stake in what's going on in the housing committee. So it's kind of a way for us to make sure that housing has a conversation to talk about when we're doing those things. Again, looking forward to work on the bill and have some discussions offline.
Thank you, Chair Igel. Representative Howard, you've got a question.
Thank you, Chair Igel. I think agreement that we need to be trying to find ways to make housing more affordable, and so I know that's the reason the bill's before us. My question is a little bit just on how this functionally would work. You know, who is deciding if something meets a $3,000 threshold? That's a bit of an eye of the beholder. Do you have an idea of just how functionally this might work in practice? And do we have, I guess, a follow-up, are there other examples where we have triggers like this in statute or in House rules?
Chair Igel.
Chair Dodseth and Chair Howard, thank you for the question. To my knowledge right now, there really isn't anything else out there, right? I mean, per House rules and the way that this chamber functions, there really isn't anything there like that. This would be something new of its kind, but it's new of its kind because we are in a housing crisis. And I think that the folks in this room are doing a lot of good work, and the people who are in the future are part of the housing committee do a lot of good work to understand all the different barriers and challenges that we're facing. And it would be kind of a next-gen idea to look at this and say, let's make sure we have more eyes on policies and mandates to make sure we aren't, you know, we don't want this committee working on driving down the cost of housing and have other committees raising it on us. So it's getting us a better seat at the table and making sure the issue is fully addressed.
Chair Howard, for all. Thank you. I see we have one more additional question. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. I think I like this bill. The reason is because I think it's important for us, as mentioned, to understand what other committees are doing, because if you have, say, labor and workforce creating new rules, say, on subcontracting or other things that is raising the price of housing, we should at least be aware of it. And you think about it, if, say, there's 10 bills that are going through, just only 10 bills, that could potentially raise, you know, $30,000 on a cost, you know, new energy efficient rules. They all of a sudden decide we need to have different shingles because of they've now found asphalt or whatever reason they can't do it. So there's many, many things that I can think of that would raise the cost of housing. And I think what I like about it is what other committees may not be thinking of, this department or this committee is thinking about it and at least can get those comments out there and be aware of, instead of next year, all of a sudden we sit here and it's like, housing just went up $30,000. How did it did it? And then we have people coming in and testifying, well, this happened. We could have those conversations before they happen. So I think it's a good bill and a good idea to get us, you know, so we can get on the radar as far as what's happening. So thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. Chair Eagle, would you like closing statements, please?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members, for the discussion on this. Again, I know this is kind of a unique kind of proposal that's in front of us, something kind of new. But again, it's kind of how can we think outside the box on this one to make sure that we are doing everything we can to keep housing prices stable and keep them in mind as the members in this room that have been tasked with tackling the housing crisis. So again, I look forward to the further conversations working on this as we lay it over, and thank you again.
Thank you, Chair Eagle. House file number 2492 will be laid over for possible inclusion. I will now turn the gavel back over to Chair Eagle.
All right, members, we'll move to our last bill on the agenda, House File 2309 with Representative Rierauer.
Thank you so much, Chair Igo. I was just so enthralled with our committee hearing, I completely forgot. All right, so House File 2309.
Representative Rierauer, would you like to move your bill first?
Oh, yes, please.
Yes.
That would be the first time I've done that, so what do I say?
So, yeah. Gosh, unsure about the Ranger Party, no snacks. Representative Rierauer moves that House Bill 2309 okay. Be laid over for possible inclusion. Representative Rierauer, to your bill.
Thank you much. Thank you so much, Chair Igo, for your help and support on that. So House File 2309 is an agency bill. And so I'll just walk through the bill with you line by line to share what the language, the meaning behind the language. So Section 1, on line 1.14, we've got that LIUNA brought this forward to meet their intent that wage theft was not going on in the low-income housing tax credit awards. So this covers all allocating agencies by including sub-allocators, such as Minneapolis, St. Paul, Dakota, and Washington counties, to the requirement to use responsible contractors, and when applicable, create wage theft prevention plans. And this was the intent of the stakeholders. Moving on to 1.15 to 1.16, we just used the term multifamily rather than multi-unit residential, so it's just a clarification there. Section 2, Statewide Rental Assistance Program, lines 1.2 to 1.22. It modifies the Bring It Home Statewide Rental Assistance Program to allow the agency to distribute funds by formula to program administrators to make things more straightforward. So this has the support from NARO, is that right? The National Association of Housing and Redevelopment Officials. Moving on to 2.4 to 2.5, in the event that there are vouchers that weren't able to be placed in an area, this would allow the agency to move them around in order to ensure utilization. Okay, Section 3, we're on the challenge program, lines 2.19 to 2.21. This grant program allows for a school to take on building a home with support from the students. So we would want to allow a nonprofit to be able to handle the overseeing of the process rather than the school to necessarily be the only one to be able to oversee the process. So the nonprofit would oversee the process and the payments, and the school would focus on just the building portion if they so choose. So this change would allow the nonprofit organization contracted by a school district, a cooperative unit or charter school, to be eligible for grants up to $100,000 from this challenge program. Okay, section 4, the state housing tax credit 3.23 to 3.24. This section ensures there's no double dipping. So for example, we want to prevent someone from getting the tax benefit to then also being an investor in this project. And the new language makes a slight change to exclude an individual that is actually a nonprofit volunteer board member from the definition of officer or principal. So this allows a carve out for a board member that isn't actually receiving any financial benefit from the building of the development, and who wouldn't have a financial interest in the project in an ongoing basis. So this is language that was agreed to with Habitat. Okay, 4.5. The League of Minnesota Cities and the Minnesota Housing Partnership brought this forward. The Workforce Housing and Development Program right now does not have income limits. This change would allow projects to not be subject to income requirements if they are under the state housing tax program, if they have also received the Workforce Housing Development Program award. And then in section 5, local affordable housing aid 4.25 to 4.26. This change would require that if there is income generated from the program, for example, if there was interest coming in on loans, that money has to go back into the program and can't be used for something else. And then this language is just getting matched below in section 6. So the local affordable housing aid and then the statewide affordable housing aid, matching that language in both. Almost done. Section 7, local housing trust funds 6.1 to 6.2. Changes the time frame for a grantee to use grant funds from 8 years to 5 years. And this is just to align with the Office of Grants Management Practices. So it will match that office's statutory guidelines and the guidelines that they use. Section 8, the high-rise sprinkler program, 6.16 to 6.17, changes the height requirements for this. And then modifies the building income requirements to allow for up to 60% of AMI. So those two lines clarify the eligibility requirements. There was actually a building in Hopkins that had the required number of stories, but in terms of feet, it was too short. So we want the language to match the intent of the height of those buildings that are available for that grant program. Also, there weren't enough applicants with the language the way it was drafted. So these changes in stories slash feet and the changes in income requirements are going to open it up just a little bit to get enough applicants. And then 6.25 allows for loans in addition to grants. There can be situations where we award funds to a tax credit project. Then we would need to provide this through a loan rather than a grant because of IRS rules. And that is the changes. So happy to answer any questions. And we have our testifier here to answer any questions also.
I'll go to testimony first. If Mr. Kitzberger wants to say anything on behalf of the agency.
Sure. For the record, I'm Dan Kitzberger. I'm the legislative director of Minnesota Housing. And I just wanted to thank Representative Ray Rauer for being willing to carry our bill. Just a couple things I'd note. Sections 4 and 8 are actually bills that have been before the committee, and so another vehicle for that language to get across the finish line, hopefully.
Thank you. We'll go to member discussion. Representative Nash.
Thanks, Mr. Chair and Representative Rayar. I was really hoping you could be more detailed in your presentation of the bill. Thanks for doing the bill.
Any other member discussion? Chair Howard.
I want to thank Representative Rierauer. I'm also pretty sure you're locked into doing all the omnibus policy bills for Minnesota housing in the future for making that so easy on Dan. But thank you for carrying the bill, and thanks to Minnesota Housing. These are good changes, and I'm glad to have them before the committee.
I'll echo that as well. Thanks for knowing your bill. It was very good. You don't see that every day. So kudos to you. Closing comments on your bill, Representative Rierauer.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Chair Igo, and all the representatives on the committee. I wanted to make sure, especially with this being the first agency bill I worked with you on, that I did understand and tried to explain it in terms that you all would understand also. So appreciate that.
With that, Representative Rierauer renews the motion that House File 2309 be laid over for possible inclusion. All right, members, that concludes our agenda for the day. Our next meeting will be on April 1st. We look forward to seeing everyone on April Fool's Day. We are adjourned.